Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
Strap on your parachute. It's time for What Goes Up with Sarah Ponczek and Mike Regan.
Hello, and welcome to What Goes Up, a Bloomberg Weekly Markets podcast. I'm Sarah Ponczek, a reporter on the Cross Asset team.
And I'm Mike Regan, a senior editor at Bloomberg.
This week on the show, October of 2020 has brought plenty of surprises. President Trump was diagnosed with COVID-19, along with many other in the top ranks of the White House. And on top of that, antitrust regulation is back in the spotlight for megacap tech companies. Still, the stock market hasn't seemed too bothered, and instead, financial markets look to be pricing in inflation once again.
But Sarah, the big surprise of the week for our listeners out there is Sarah got herself a puppy.
I did, impulsively. I did. I went to get a dog for my parents, and then I ended up buying one of the siblings for myself. So I'm really hoping she doesn't wake up in the middle of this because she's laying on the floor right next to me. I just pooped her out right before we all walked on. I was trying to run her around the apartment as much as possible.
Oh, okay. But pooped her out could have a couple meanings. I didn't know which one you were using there. I got you. I've made a lot of impulse purchases in my life, but never a golden doodle. That's a big one. That's a big impulse purchase. I applaud you though. As a co-owner of a golden doodle, I'm very happy for you. In fact, I showed the picture to my kids, and they were like, the middle one was like, "You should have the two dogs bark at each other on the podcast." And I thought that was a great idea. What do you think?
It's a great idea, but I don't know if our guest will be too appreciative of that or our producer, for a matter of fact. But maybe later, Mike.
Probably more insightful than the first presidential debate, so I'd be open to it.
Honestly, very good point.
And more civil, too.
All right, Sarah, fine. You be the party pooper. No dogs on this podcast.
She's sleeping maybe, right now. I can't wake her up.
All right, fine. That voice you heard, that's our guest. First time on the show. We're very happy to have him. His name is Max Gockman. He is the head of asset allocation at Pacific Life Fund Advisors over in Newport Beach, California. Max, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
We end up having a lot of people from Newport Beach, California on the show. Sarah, I think we need to get out there and hold a podcast in person in Newport Beach sometime.
It seems like it's either Newport Beach or New Jersey. Two extremes.
Jersey, yeah.
Almost no difference. Right.
Really, basically the same thing. The same thing. That's right. No boardwalks in Newport Beach, as far as I know, though.
No turnpikes either.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing. You're selling me on it. Well, Max, let's get started here. As the head of asset allocation, I feel like it's a tricky time. Bond yields are so super low. Equity valuations are super high, at least historically compared to themselves. I guess if you go back and look at those bond yields, they don't look as high as normal. How are you wrapping your head around the valuations in both markets this year? What are you telling clients? What's your basic advice to someone trying to get some kind of real yield in this crazy world?
Sure. Well, it's been an interesting time, obviously. To just start up by saying the most obvious thing. The other thing is for us, we've been a bit more dynamic this year. And we actually started the year fairly neutral. We saw that the market was priced to perfection. and didn't see a lot of upside opportunities. We actually, in our year beginning outlook, said there's probably going to be about a 10% correction. That'll be a good tactical time to dip back into equities. We were very wrong on the magnitude of that correction, of course, but we did have the right idea. So we wound up adding risk into the portfolio right around March 20th. And that was really predicated on one of those situations that you really hope to experience as an investor, where everyone is going one way in to such an extreme that the contrarian call suddenly seems very, very rational. So when folks are selling treasuries and gold and just moving into money markets, you know, all else being equal, you would say, well, that's probably a time to take the other side of that. But when you also have a fiscal package that dwarfs TARP about to be put through, that, you know, really adds a lot of tailwind. So that's how we got risk on late March. And then over the last quarter, we really put all our bulls back in the pen. And Sarah, you and I have spoken about that a couple of times. But, you know, the market was making new record highs, but the recovery actually started decelerating. And we think that permabulls may wind up running off the fiscal cliff before the year is out this year. So what do we do now? If you're looking for real yield, I would say dividends are not a bad way to go. I think more defensive plays within that space, like utilities, are actually going to give you a decent yield. We think that high yield credit is also remains attractive. Spreads can tighten a bit more. The Fed has that massive backstop, and high yield is the biggest beneficiary of that. So for investors looking to find yield in a desert of ZERP, that would be what we'd say.
So if we are seeing a deceleration in the economy, at least from that very strong recovery that we had seen coming off the bottoms since March, and at the same time, there is concern over will or will we not get another fiscal package? As you mentioned, we might fall off that fiscal cliff. Why is it that we are seeing this reflation trade resume? I mean, we look at 10-year, 30-year treasury yields now at the highest since early June. We're seeing small caps, value, cyclicals start to outperform. How is it possible that this is happening when so many of those concerns still exist?
So that's a really good question. And I think there's two possibilities, right? Because I never want to say, well, this is what investors are thinking, because I'm only one investor. But one is there's, and this is what I would say is most likely, is that there's an understanding that we're going to see much more fiscal stimulus. That fiscal stimulus is going to have, you know, by Newton's third law of thermodynamics, an equal and opposite reaction. That's going to be massive treasury issuance. So if we're issuing a lot more treasuries, the curve is going to steepen on that longer end. And I think that's why yields are going up. The other and related reason is if the Fed does go into yield curve control mode, then that in and of itself will be inflationary as well.
So how would you envision the yield curve control? Would it be to allow sort of a gradual steepening, but not a really sort of sharp move one way or the other? Is that kind of the safest bet, do you think?
I think it would be gradual. I mean, certainly the Fed would intend for it to be gradual. But one problem with YCC is that it's very open-ended and market-dependent. So, you know, let's look at Japan, for example. In 2016, they announced yield curve control, and they actually had to buy a lot less JGBs since then. We may get a very different experiment result in the U.S., and that's where the curve could move quicker. I think the Fed would try to slowly phase it in and be very, very clear about that. Powell's, I think, learned the importance of being very predictable as Fed chair. So most likely we could allow for a gradual steepening, but still a steepening to a level where it's advantageous for the Treasury. So if we have inflation go up at the same time as yields are capped at a low rate, then you're actually issuing negative real rate debt. And if you look at CBO forecasts and do a little bit of arithmetic, you can actually see that that's what they expect for 2027. They're actually expecting that the average real yield of new treasury debt is going to be negative.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
So you have a real yield of treasuries that's going to be negative. Is this almost the perfect coalescence of a bullish environment? I mean, okay, you have COVID-19 in the picture, still very much with us, but if we get more fiscal stimulus, yields start rising, it forces the Fed to start doing more asset purchases on the long end to keep them suppressed. All of a sudden, you have plenty of liquidity in the system and you have extremely, extremely low yields, even in an environment where we're still coming back from a recession.
Yeah, I would say as we look into 2021, we are seeing the potential for growth to really come back. In fact, one of the reasons we've more recently tilted into value stocks and away from growth stocks, even as we've, again, you know, more near term scaled down our risk to be fully neutral, is because we do anticipate that growth will pick up. And above trend growth is exactly what value needs and hasn't had in the last 14 years to accelerate. So yeah, it's could be that perfect storm in that regard, Sarah.
Now, Max, do you think a steepening of the yield curve, you know, like I said at the beginning, sort of the case for equities is that, yes, valuations are high, but, you know, with bond yields near historically low, especially, you know, 10 to 30 year space, you know, from that valuation metrics, equities still don't look too frothy. What would that gradual steepening of the yield curve do for valuations? Is there enough earnings potential next year to keep this rally going? Or will we see some sort of compression in valuations if that curve steepens and maybe a rocky road for equities in 2021?
So I think it depends on where you look within the equity market. When we look at tech, which has obviously been both, interestingly, a momentum and a defensive play this year, we have seen earnings run up so much that those valuations are going to be tricky to justify. So I think that's where you're going to have some issues. I think there's a saturation, even if we think of like the work from home theme. Right, we've all bought fancy microphones and cameras, and we've all added Disney Plus and Hulu and Netflix, bought our Zoom premium packages. So there is that saturation that's there. I don't see that expectation in the earnings revisions, which have only gotten higher and higher. So eventually, you know, you're going into the shed and taking out a pole vault to get over that bar, just to you know, meet expectations. I think that's where it's going to be a little trickier. Conversely, there's going to be more downtrodden sectors, and again, I'll point to value, where investors have been, you know, largely ignoring it, and it still remains well behind growth. In fact, it's still down year to date, where I think valuations are a lot more reasonable. And at the same time, as is typically the case, when the economy is roaring, investors stop paying a higher premium. So I think all that is going to coalesce into a really good situation for, again, certain value sectors will probably be a lot more tricky for tech. And we haven't even touched on the prospects of, you know, tech regulation.
Max, I think you just dropped a hint for us to point out how great your audio is, because Max was one of those who went out and bought himself a fancy microphone. He has, I think, a fancier one than both Mike and I. So he was prepared for this. But Max, you bring up tech regulation, and I do want to ask you about this, because this past week we did hear once again from members of Congress and those on Capitol Hill talking about antitrust regulation for these very, very large mega cap tech companies that have just been leaders for so long and have just grown into almost monopolies. And this has been discussed for a while, but it did seem like this report that was released had a little bit more meat on its bones. However, at the same time, it didn't seem like any of these companies in the stock market seemed to care. We might be seeing a rotation out of tech a bit. Over the past 5 days, tech is one of the worst performing sectors. Is anything different this time? Is there any reason to really believe that we are going to see politicians, policymakers go ahead and actually implement this policy and make some changes?
I believe there is. And I also believe the fact that the market doesn't seem to care is exactly what makes being underweight tech an attractive trade, because you kind of want to be contrarian on regulatory arbitrage. So the reason why I think it's different this time is because tech regulation is bipartisan. The reason for regulating tech are different. So, you know, if we fast forward past November, December, whenever we, you know, find out the result of the election and we have a new president in Congress, then if it's a Republican controlled Congress and White House, then they'll focus on perceived anti-conservative bias as a reason to really suppress social media companies and Alphabet. If it is a more Democrat-controlled Congress, well, I think, you know, really, we've been talking about a blue wave a lot, and I think a blue wave is really going to be a tsunami that drowns the tech giants, because the antitrust findings that have been found by that panel, which is largely, you know, Democrat-controlled because it's in the House, I think they're pretty substantial, and it's going to be hard to for Amazon, for Apple, for Google to say that their marketplaces really are not infringing on companies. I mean, there's been so much more momentum, and there's also been a much more momentum within the public, within the electorate, to say, yeah, we have concerns about privacy. Yeah, we are hearing from small businesses who are getting pressured by Amazon. There's a lot of developers who complain about Apple's control of the App Store. So all those things create a very different environment than what we saw in years prior. And so regardless of November's outcome, it just doesn't look good for tech. I don't think it's going to be an overnight thing. I don't think this is something where, you know, end of Q1, we have massive antitrust regulation going through for tech, but it's going to be a structural theme. And eventually investors are going to have to care when those proceedings are really gaining steam.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
All right, Max, I've been thinking about the antitrust issue from a different angle, and I'm not sure if it makes me a contrarian or just a deluded idiot. So let me know what you think. But, you know, if I'm an investor, say, in Facebook or Amazon, and Congress comes in and says, you have to break up these companies. Well, how it's done, I think, is important. You know, if Facebook were to say spin off, and I'm just making up these possible ways they could be broken up. Who knows how it could really be done? But say Facebook spins Instagram off to shareholders, or Amazon spins off Amazon Web Services, their cloud business, off to shareholders, or Apple spins off the App Store to shareholders. Is that necessarily a bearish thing for these stocks in the long run? Do those business synergies kind of outweigh the potential benefits shareholders could get in a breakup if shareholders end up getting cash or stock in one of the units that spun off?
Yeah, that's a really fair question, actually. And I think the answer lies in the margins that you see tech companies have enjoyed, which are really actually one of the reasons we can justify their valuations to a certain extent and why we were fine owning them as an overweight earlier in the year before the most recent run-ups. Once you spin off a division, you reduce your margin because you're just going to have more of the same departments duplicated, right? So there's going to be a lot of additional hiring that'll need to happen. There won't be as much scale and cross-selling by definition, right? So Instagram can't cross-sell to Facebook, etc. First of all, they'd still be large businesses, right? Instagram on its own is a very large company. But without Facebook as its parent, it's going to definitely find a tougher time on expanding and growing and doing so at a low cost. And similarly, Facebook will lose one of its biggest growth engines because obviously, although Facebook execs don't like talking about this too much, Instagram has really been the reason why Facebook has done so well. So I think long-term, it'll be interesting to see how these companies, once they're independent in whatever scenario that ultimately comes through, can really make a go of it themselves. But they are going to be competing with each other. And I don't think that's going to be a medium-term, certainly not a near-term bullish catalyst. Longer-term, we'll have to reevaluate.
Right.
Yeah, pricing power goes down a lot, I guess, in that scenario. Mm-hmm.
The point of antitrust, increased competition. But speaking of competition, Mike, I believe that it's that time.
Oh, boy. It's that time. Did someone warn Max about our gimmick?
Oh, he's prepared, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. I'm ready.
Stand clear of the craziest things we saw in markets this week.
All right, Sarah, let's start with you. What's the craziest thing you saw in markets this week?
All right, so I'm going to come clean, completely admit I had help from our Crazy Things correspondent this week, but it is a really, really good one. So this was a story in the Financial Times, just from the headline, the start of it. It reads, Vatican used charity funds to bet on Hertz credit derivatives.
I love that story. That's good.
Unbelievable. So essentially, I'll just read you a bit from the story from the FT. The Vatican invested some donations for the poor and needy in derivatives that bet on the creditworthiness of Hertz, the U.S. car rental company that defaulted on its debts earlier this year, according to documents seen by the FT. And it goes on and it says in 2018, Pope Francis said credit default swaps, quote, encourage the growth of a finance of chance and of gambling on the failure of others, which is unacceptable from the ethical point of view. But the instruments, he said, were a ticking time bomb. Meanwhile, you have this going on in Hertz, supposedly. So who are we dealing with? The Vatican? Robin Hood? Not really sure.
What's really interesting about that, Sarah, is it gives credence to what Lloyd Blankfein, the former chairman of Goldman Sachs, said when he mentioned they were doing God's work. So I guess they actually are.
That's a good one. Like, truly.
I'd love to see the Vatican's P&L, though. It's, you know, they have a pretty, they have an investment arm of the Vatican. I'd love to see what their P&L is. That's a pretty good move going along Hertz CDS. I think a lot of fund managers probably wish they had found religion on that issue there.
In hindsight, yeah, in hindsight. We also had one, we had someone tweet that I wanted to make sure I mentioned as well, Mike, also because they've gave me a little props, which of course I have to play up if I have the chance. So this comes from, I apologize if I'm pronouncing your name wrong, but Karan Verdi at K Vora. And he said, as it relates to Justin Bieber posting that picture of Croc, sending Croc shares soaring, he said, definitely to be mentioned in podcast for crazy things this week. And then he said, Mike can have it for next time. He's been lagging behind so far. So you hear that? You've been lagging behind so far, Mike?
I don't know what podcast this guy's been listening to. I don't know about that one. That is a good thing, though. We thank him for that contribution, the Justin Bieber. Also one from Ben Emmons, who's been on the show, the strategist at Medley Global Advisors, pointing out the programmer at Citigroup who was moonlighting as the head of a QAnon conspiracy theory website, and they managed to fire that guy. I was wondering, Sarah, you know, in his employment agreement, what exactly they could fire this guy for. I mean, I guess there's a lot of material there they can work with, so they ended up getting rid of him.
It is a little bit surprising. It makes me think about who we're surrounded with at work, if anyone's a conspiracy theorist.
It's kind of dangerous, though. You know, who there could be a Citigroup conspiracy theory website up now next. You know, they might be playing with fire there a little bit.
Now Mike is starting his own conspiracy theories.
All right, Max, what do you got for us?
Well, I've got a three-course meal of madness for you guys.
We love that.
So first course is fish and chips. And I'm kind of amazed with Brexit hinging on basically Johnson and Macron agreeing on letting Frenchmen keep fishing in British waters. So fishing rights are 0.1% of the British economy. Yet that is actually what's holding up Brexit right now. And Johnson went so far as to say, if we don't get a deal by middle of next week, or you know, by October 15th, then we're walking. So pretty incredible.
Are the fish fresher in certain bodies of water than others?
Apparently, fish in the British waters are very dominant, and it's actually really important to the French as well as other EU members to keep fishing there without restriction. But aside from those fishermen, I don't think it's really a reason to plunge both economies into a deeper recession. But you know, the EU is never stopped short of arguing over minuscule points. So next course after our fish course, we're going to go to steak, and this was just a really great story that I saw. Actually, as I was like, I wonder what I'm going to say for, you know, craziest thing in the markets, and all of a sudden they get across my terminal, Salt Bae looking to delay payments on $2.7 billion of debt. So I guess the Salt Bae experience doesn't translate well into takeout.
Well, you know, Max, I was walking by the Salt Bae restaurant the other day in Manhattan, and I was thinking, you know, I mean, it opened right before this all began, and I was thinking, you know, this can't possibly be going well, I would imagine.
Apparently not, and it's their parent company, which I was actually shocked. It's like, how does Salt Bae have $3 billion of debt to restructure? So once you read past the headline, it's actually their holding company, but they are a Turkish holding company owning a lot of hospitality and restaurant assets. So looking pretty tough there from the geopolitical and the sector stance. So hopefully, I don't know, maybe they'll have Salt Bae go to the investor meetings, and you know. But I guess they can't because of COVID. So really, I don't know how we're going to dig themselves out of
people
this.
People would watch Salt Bae over Zoom.
That's maybe. It'll be interesting to see. And for my final course, we're going to go to chicken. And this is just that big story on Tyson and the other poultry companies fixing chicken prices from 2012 to 2019. The craziest thing about it to me is that actually Pilgrim's Pride was up on the day, and Tyson didn't really move that much. So I don't really know how this doesn't send stocks down a little bit more. You'd think that a forthcoming indictment should have more of an impact, but I guess everyone believes that we'll just keep eating chicken nuggets.
Wow, Sarah, this guy's good. That's three solid crazy things right there. Yeah,
three solid ones, but Max, I was hoping for some dessert too. So next time,
you always got to leave them wanting more. So I'll keep working on my menu for next time.
That's pretty good.
All right well, Mike,
of course, I'm going back to the well of the alternative investment space, Sarah. I also have a three part crazy thing. I don't know what it is, but I guess in the fall this time of year, the art auctions really pick up steam. Everyone's back from the Hamptons and wherever they go in California. I guess it's always summer in California, so maybe it doesn't matter. But first one in art auction news, this is nuts. I did not realize Deutsche Bank is apparently one of the world's biggest owners of fine art. They have something like 50,000 pieces of art in the Deutsche Bank collection, and they're going to sell about 200 of those going forward. So that's the appetizer. The other one is a big art auction at Christie's, but sprinkled in with the art, they were selling a full-sized T-Rex skeleton. So someone dug up a Tyrannosaurus Rex skeleton, the whole thing, and apparently that's very rare. I think the ones you see in museums usually are fakes. You know, they just recreate it. full-length, full-size T-Rex skeleton. Sarah, you know what time it is. It's Price is Right. What would you
Price
pay
is
for
right.
a full-size
oh, I knew this was coming.
Full-size T-Rex skeleton?
Oh, gosh. I'm gonna go way up there this time because I do know someone who once dug up a woolly mammoth vertebrae, and I know that went for a good amount. So I would imagine T-Rex full skeleton, say, $50 million. Really, bringing it up.
First of all, we're going to have to talk about your friend who dug up a woolly mammoth.
Another time.
Another time. We'll save that. Keep the listeners guessing because that's a story I got to hear. Max, what's your bid for a full-size T-Rex skeleton?
I got to come in a little bit higher than Sarah on that. I would say $70 million.
$70 million. Both are pretty good bids. I got to say, if I ever start an auction house, you two are going to be my first points of contact. I'm getting you in on every bid. I think it was, and I apologize, I can't remember the exact number because my computer just died on me, but I believe it was $32 million.
Oh, wow.
Okay, not horrible.
The bargain.
Full size. Yeah. Hopefully whoever bought it is listening because they'll offer it to Sarah, I think, next, and Max, get a bidding war.
Yeah, I'm going to throw a T-Rex skeleton in my apartment with all the room that I have currently.
All right, but that's not the craziest auction of the week. Someone, there's this art project in London that for some reason it's dedicated to promoting Bitcoin because there's not enough people, Sarah, out there promoting Bitcoin. They needed to get some artists involved. So what they did is they took all of the original code from, what was the guy, Satoshi, I forget his last name, Satoshi, the guy, which, by the way, was not even his real name, whoever the guy that originally coded Bitcoin. They took that original code and they cut it up into 40 pieces and they printed each one out on this big round disc to look like a coin. And they're starting to sell them off one by one. Included in that disc is a token. They call it a non-fungible token. So you get a Bitcoin token in this, but you know, you can't go trade it like you could any other Bitcoin token. So I believe what Christie's, the auction house, wanted for this thing was between, I think, 12 and 18,000. Once again, Price is Right. What are you bidding, Max, for this Bitcoin token printed out? I think it's the first 300 and some thousand digits of the code.
Wow. I would bid maybe 10,000.
A lowball.
Yeah,
lowball.
That.
I would lowball too myself. I would lowball it. It's not a very pleasant looking piece of artwork, per se. T-Rex, on the other hand, if I could put a T-Rex in my backyard, I'd bid that thing up. All right, Sarah,
I'm sure
what's your bid?
Would love the T-Rex. So if you said 10,000 was lowballing it, I'll go for 50K.
It was something like 150K. So. You know, hey, oh, those wow. BitCon.
Well, we're completely
Bitcoin
off on both auctions.
Yeah. Yeah. In fiat money, they as the Daily Bitcoin website
okay.
points out, it was fiat money.
So what we need to do here is print the Bitcoin code on a T-Rex, and then we can go into the 100 million range,
Whoa.
Okay? That's the plan.
That.
And Sarah, and that is why Max is the head of asset allocation.
It truly
the guy
is.
Knows,
he has,
the guy knows how to put a portfolio together.
He's got the creativity that you need. All right. I do think we're going to have to leave it there, though. Remember, you can always give us a call at our very own Bloomberg podcast hotline. That number is 646-324-3490. If you call us, leave us a message. We may even play it on the show. But Max Gockman, thanks so much for joining us this week. We really appreciate it.
This was great. Thanks, guys.
And I'm gonna name Max the winner with the British fish thing. That wins the week. I'm gonna give it to you.
Thank you.
As painful as it is for me to admit defeat, I gotta hand it to him on that one. Thanks, Max.
What goes up will be back next week. Until then, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal website and app, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love it if you took the time to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts so more listeners can find us. And you can find us on Twitter. Follow me at Sarah Ponsek. Mike is at Reaganonymous. And you can also follow Bloomberg Podcasts at Podcasts. Also, thank you to Charlie Pellett of Bloomberg Radio and the voice of the New York City subway system. What Goes Up is produced by Jordan Gaspore. The head of Bloomberg Podcasts is Francesca Levy. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Join us in Chicago or virtually on May 2nd for Bloomberg's Business Value of AI event and networking reception. This event will gather business and technology executives to share their experiences and provide insights into their strategies for deploying AI that achieves a desirable ROI. You'll also learn how companies have successfully implemented AI solutions that have improved productivity and profitability. This program is proudly sponsored by IBM. Register at BloombergLive.com/AI/radio.